CliffCentral.com.
Woohoo! You are listening to the Weekly Mashup with your girl, Candace Mama. Thank you guys so much for all the love I've been receiving since I've gone solo. I'm kidding, guys. Tamisha's coming back. But I've always got a great show for you guys. And last week, you remember me telling you about Mr. Garion Dowds, who was going to join me in studio. And he is here. Thank you, Jesus.
Thank you very much.
I was having such a groupie moment. Like, guys, you don't even understand. I don't have a lot of groupie moments, eh? Like, I've met some really powerful people, and I don't have groupie moments. And then I meet Garion, and I was like, "Woo, boy, please be on my show, please."
Thank you very much.
And I have got all the woos. Were not coming from me, guys. I'm not that talented. So I've got Mr. Nee Naidu with me.
Hey, what's happening? I'm really good. All the better for being right here in this moment with y'all.
Girl, you look beautiful.
Thank you. Look who's talking. Can I just say, she's literally covered in danger tape today. This is how hot Candace Mama is. Like, she arrives with danger tape around her.
I'm my own hype man.
You know? But thank you. Thank you. It's so good to be here, man.
Oh, it's so good to have you. I would have had no one else. I mean, last week I had Belinda. No, last week I had Belinda, and she was absolutely amazing, obviously, right, as Belinda is. And when you now I've got you, I mean, I've probably got the best friends in the world.
Your squad is rolling deep, yo. I mean,
my squad is hot.
Garion to my left, and
Garion was getting compliments like all the way through Cliff Central, and even the ones that weren't to his face, people are like, "Who is that? He's kind of cute."
God, he's seen Garion dances in the building.
They're like, "Did you see his eyes?" So like, girl,
heart
those
eyes, alert.
Those Leonardo DiCaprio eyes, eh?
Oh, well, I really hope.
So, Gary, beware.
How old are you?
20.
Wow. You turned 20 just the other day.
Yeah, on the 11th.
Wow. He's quite young. He makes me feel like a little older. You know, like I'm just like, I'm now in my mid-20s. And I'm like, I'm feeling it.
So listen, I'm then technically the Omar in this bunch because I turn 30 next year, January. So now, wow. Now I know what this is starting to feel like.
Well, 30 looks good.
What?
30 Thanks, looks girl. Really good. You give us all Thank hope. You. No, but then again, you also give us pressure because if I don't look like that at 30,
listen,
it's going to be a damn shame.
You are like going to be the curious case of Candace Mama because you're just going to get... Yeah,
Aww. And now everyone's listening to the show like, she brought people to hype her up.
Yeah, actually, our EFTs are done, eh? EFTs are done. POPs
I'm prompt with payments. I'm very prompt with my payments. I don't like owing nobody nothing.
You know, because otherwise them shepherds and butchers are going to come after you.
Clever play on words.
See what
Clever
I did
play
there?
On words. Oh my gosh. So how's your week been, Dee? What's been happening?
It has been... fantastic, overwhelming, incredible, surprising. And
wow, those are a lot of descriptive
words. I know,
words.
Right? But I promise you, all of the above is true. I am at a very big tipping point right now for myself and just career-wise, which has just slapped me upside the head. And in a few weeks, it will make sense.
I'm excited.
So, yeah, it's really been incredible. I just do feel overwhelmed. I'm not even going to lie. I think also just coupled with the fact that it is silly season in our industry is just a jay.
Yeah.
It's just really crazy. But I'm happy. I'm content. You know, I mean,
good.
Who can complain about having stuff to do and who can complain about being busy?
Especially in this industry.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
But so. I mean, you've been in the industry for a while. Like,
yeah.
People love you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, my journey started on Hectic 99, SABC 2. From there, I went on to Expresso and did insert presenting for them. Then onto Edge, which was all about science and tech. And, you know, for me, it's always about, I feel like sustainability in this industry is about never forgetting that you need people to do what you do. And to never, ever forget to be humble and just... not lose the human touch.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's great to have the perks that we do with industry, and no doubt that it's wonderful. But I think it needs to be an equal conscious effort just to keep yourself surrounded with those that you love, people that are really dope.
Yeah,
I can say that right.
Dope, girl.
Dope,
this is on radio. You can say whatever the hell you want.
Look at this behavior. So, yes, I'm really feeling, you know how it is when you've worked and worked and worked and you get to the point where, okay, I see it. The groundwork is starting to
pay off.
So, very grateful. And people have been super good to me. My move to Joburg has been extremely instrumental in my growth.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot from the industry and from people here. Mm-hmm. So onwards and upwards. I can only hope it gets better and it gets more amazing.
It will. But you know what I love about you? When we first met, I mean, you had no idea who I was. And I was just a nervous wreck. I was just like looking around like, I hope all these people don't throw me with something. And when I started my talk like that, everyone was like, in my heart, I was like, you know?
Listen,
I mean, it was a room of some incredible people. And I mean, you had no idea who I was. And you still treated me with such respect. You were so nice to me. And even after the talk, you were even better. And I was like, oh my.
We have a friendship now.
Exactly.
Actually, it's so real. It's so real, guys. Can I just tell you? Our friendship's so real that we have a WhatsApp group now. We have now named that WhatsApp group Black Hangs because we have stemmed it back to the origins of our meeting. But I just have to tell you, I mean, meeting you has been so wonderful. You're such fire. And I mean, you really touched me on my studio. You know, I honestly didn't know everything that you were about. And I had not been able to be in your presence before that night. And I walked away just so changed and touched by the young, dynamic, amazing person of substance that you are. So yeah, go mama, go mama.
Thank you, my friend. That means so much to me.
Thank you.
But I just want to give Gary, before I even give you a chance to speak, I just want to speak about I want to speak more about myself and how amazing I am. But I'm teasing. I want to speak more about the movie Shepherds and Butchers and why it, like, I've been telling everyone I come across to watch this movie. And a lot of the time people tend to say very negative things because they're like, oh, another white, you know, sympathize with white guilt kind of movie.
Yeah.
And you're not familiar with my particular story. And some people who are listening, I know a lot of people tune into the show all the time that have no idea who I am, except those crazy chick. I was going to use different words.
It's crazy. Beehive.
Birch. But I mean, this movie's done really well globally. And one of the things it's actually done is it won a Maverick Award for Best Feature Narrative in New York State.
Yeah, Woodstock.
Yes. Yeah. And it's been showing everywhere, really. And I mean, people have really had incredible things to say globally about this movie. It's actually now in South Africa that it's getting obviously a lot of heat because I think, you know what, we've only been about 24 years into democracy, and I think that's where people are very agitated about this movie. But let me just give you just a very brief synopsis about my own story so that I can tell you how I relate to this particular movie. And basically what happened to me was my dad was murdered by an apartheid assassin by the name of Eugene de Kock, and I met him 2 or 3 years ago. And after meeting him, you know, I forgave him. And I started giving talks on, because people were very curious, how can you forgive this guy? He didn't just kill your father, he killed millions. Like, you know, obviously not millions, but people really don't like him. And I always try to explain to people, like, where this stemmed from. And when I watched Shepherds and Butchers and I watched Leon Labuschagne's story, it almost gave me this sense of like, oh, you know, I could sigh just that, like, I just want people to watch this movie so that everything I've been saying, they can actually view and see. And basically, the movie, if you guys are not familiar with it, Shepherds and Butchers, it follows the journey of Leon Labuschagne, if I'm not mistaken. And he's a boy who was recruited into, he actually signed up to be a policeman at the age of 17 to avoid the military, which is ironic because at the military, the very thing he was avoiding, he ended up doing being a policeman. Basically, Leon, in his first or second day, he gets assigned to hanging duty. And your police commander takes you to a cell of these. And this is where it really touched me. They take him to the cell and they tell him to choose someone. And basically, the person he's going to choose is the person he needs to hang. And it just gets you. Like, I was just like, shit. You know, at 17, how can you be tasked with such a huge responsibility to kill someone? And you know that this is a very permanent thing. It's not like you're gonna be like, oh, I hanged you, hey, do you want to go for lunch? You know what I'm saying? It's very permanent, and that is very psychologically scarring. You know, and it changes the makeup of this individual. So I mean, you're very young, you're 20, and you were born free in every sense of the word. Tell me, how did you relate to this character when you got the script? How did you relate? Because obviously you read the script and you're like, I'm gonna do this.
That was actually a very big issue in the beginning, because I didn't relate to him a lot. And the characters as an individual so far away from anything that I am. But I think it was really important for me to try and find a way to relate to him. Otherwise, I was never going to be able to portray him sincerely. And I think what I eventually accepted was the movie is about not the humanity that could be left within him, but more the human being he could have been had this not happened to him.
Yeah.
I still feel at the end, and I know a lot of people that see the film are going to not be sure what side they're on or whether support him or not. I mean, even I'm still on the fence, but it's about where he could have been and how he was before he was put into the system and what it did to him and how he can never go back to who he was afterwards.
You know what I love about the story? Without forcing any human being, like, because you watch a movie, you can't force someone to believe or to be on any certain side. But when I watched this movie, I questioned, you know, and not only did I question, but I was like, okay, this is a story that needs to be told. It's a painful story, you know, it's not one of those movies you go in, you have a couple of laughs and you leave.
Yeah.
It's a story that it stays in your soul, it lingers, and you constantly thinking about the story and how it has shaped so many people. Because we live in a country, unfortunately, it's not 100 years, so a lot of our people are still alive, whereby people have had direct, you know, contact with us. And a lot of people are still living with the consequences of some of the things they did back then, you know? So, I mean, I think with the story of Leon's, without giving away too much of the story, but I mean, it's a book, so y'all can read the book. But he's basically on trial. And what I loved about this is you portrayed so much just from your face. You know, the emotion that you managed to depict in your face, I think that's another thing that touched us because, you know, obviously there was the, is it the prosecutor?
Mm-hmm.
Who was really coming at you hard and saying, look, you killed someone. You didn't kill someone. You killed, you know, a taxi full of people. And, you know, at that point, obviously as a black South African as well, it's like, damn. Why did you go and do that, Leon? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it makes you question, you know, because once the story starts unfolding and we start looking at the impact that it actually had on you before you got to that point, it becomes very scary. Now, one thing I want to go back to is you were in the movie, you are married.
Yeah.
And you've got a daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you even manage to think of putting yourself in Leon's shoes? And being a married man.
Yeah.
And now, you know, having this really hardcore job. You know, how did you relate to that? Just as Gary
is. You see, that's the thing is, he was between the ages of 17 and 19 throughout the film. And there were these, it was just the way a lot of Afrikaans families were brought up back then. And just so much pressure on these young men that I think a lot of them even today haven't dealt with. And that's one of the things this movie's done is a lot of men who've not been allowed to express what they're feeling and what they've gone through and kept it in, I think it's going to be quite a wake-up call for them.
Sure. Because I think the biggest problem with apartheid, there was no sense of people getting debriefed. You know, there wasn't a mass debriefing of the people that said, okay, now that we are moving forward as a country, how does it work?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us tended to just be, you know what, it's over, deal with it. You know, and that was from both sides. It was, okay, so we just move forward like nothing happened. And I think that's the problem we're facing today with all the marches, with everything being burnt and, you know, bring back our land. All those kind of rhetoric that's going around in our country, I think stems from the very fact that we didn't deal with the issues
properly
that we were supposed to deal with. You know, and from both sides.
And I think the reality is that now the beast is so much bigger in a sense that social media is there as a tool and something that amplifies everybody's thoughts and freedom of speech even more. And we're seeing more, we're hearing more. You're almost surprised by what is still, the word festering came up in mind, but you know, just what people are still affected by and what their thoughts are. And sometimes you thought you knew someone and then oopsie, maybe you didn't quite know them, you know?
Yes.
Because they're still dealing and there's still things that they feel now more than ever, they've actually got a better platform to rage. And in the same vein, also we can do so much positive stuff with what we've got at our disposal now.
I agree, but I think the biggest problem right now is that people are fighting because most of us are first generation in terms of our parents loved it, you know, or we have somehow been impacted by the apartheid regime.
And it's almost more confusing for us now. That's because it. I think before, the templates were there. You were living in a time. It was almost black and white in terms of like what you thought, how you felt. And now we have to take that. We have to be examples and show our parents and going forward, the people that we love and our kids, etc., that try and find a happy medium. Otherwise, nothing is ever going to change. You know, you've got to move on. You've got to somehow find a way.
Yeah.
Otherwise, when is it ever going to end?
I think what I always say about the film is, especially for the new generation, just in terms of contrasting modern day reality with how things were back then, the film's very important because now you're seeing and experiencing, as you said, what we've been learning from books and from you know, written pages and overhearing conversations, and to put ourselves through these kinds of films and feel everything and see everything for what it was, I think it will speak a lot more about how far we've come today. And I think if it creates those discussions and makes people argue about it and chat about it and we move forward, then I'm happy.
But
Amen,
you know,
hallelujah.
Yeah, but I feel like the biggest thing right now that we're facing is the clear line of a protagonist and an antagonist in this, especially in this particular film. I feel like it was really beautifully portrayed because there was no clear cut of, okay, clear villain, I hate you, you know, because I think when there's, we all thrive on clarity. That if I can stand on the black side or the white side, then I'm clearly right or I'm clearly wrong. But this film really blurs the lines.
I think what's really interesting and what I want people to bear in mind is the fact that Oliver Schmidt's, he's done a lot of films which take the other side. And he's I think this was one of the first times he's looked at a white perspective. And he was obviously very careful with it. And I want them to bear in mind that he made this film with the thought that it is one side, it's one perspective, and it's only this film that focuses on that, and it doesn't take anything away from, if you look at all of his other work, there are plenty of other films that take all perspectives, and it's more about the humanity than race.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
I love that. True.
Because I feel a lot of the time, how we manage to survive and cope in the world is by just shutting off certain perspectives, and I feel this film, I saw a lot of reviews and criticism, and of course, all of us are entitled to how we feel based on our own human perspective. But some of it was very blind criticism in terms of, oh, another movie glorifying white pain. And to me, it wasn't really about glorifying any kind of pain. It was a story that showed pain. And it's almost like a lot of the time we tend to get away with the fact that only one side suffered. And it's obviously very hard to strike a proper balance to say, okay, this side suffered, this side. But it's not about, especially where we are in the country, it's not about particularly looking at one side and saying, well, we suffered more, so we deserve. You know, it's about just saying, okay, we understand that this is the history of our country. It's complex. It's crazy deep. And there is another side, though. You know, people didn't just wake up crazy one day and say that, oh, shit. You know, I just feel like killing some black folk. Of course, they're crazy people everywhere, you know. But you, a lot of the people were trained to become this. They were trained to believe that there's a clear enemy and this is how you deal with a clear enemy. And if you put yourself in those shoes and you say, at the age of about 15, 16, 17, you're not really in the right frame of mind to be making life decisions, you know, and all of a sudden you are taken and you are forced to witness something that a lot of us thankfully will never have to witness, and that is murder. And not only are you allowed, you are given permission by your government to murder, then it blurs the line, because afterwards 1994 happens and it's like, oh, you the devil, like you just went on a killing spree for no reason. Whereas we have to understand that there was never this clear division of right and wrong. And there's a right time to murder and there's a wrong time to murder. You know, and I feel like this is the complexity that this film delves into. That's why I'm like, everybody, please go see it.
Definitely. One for the archives, one for the books. And I mean, it's also, it makes you think, like, what do you do when you are living in a time that is unfortunately just so dictative? And, you know, as a young person having to face those decisions, like, that is just what your world was. So it's like adapt or die. And that is also what's so interesting about, you know, he tried to escape one route, but then actually, so it's complex and it's, it, it's difficult. How I want to ask you, as a as an actor, how much of a toll did this take on you? How amazing, exhilarating was it to play this character?
Equally daunting and exciting. I think it was a huge weight on my shoulders from the beginning. Obviously, I don't believe anyone is 100% confident they can pull something off when they go into a huge role like this. And I was obviously under a lot of pressure, but equally excited. And I was working with people who are extremely passionate, amazing cinematographer, director, everyone on set understood how important the film was. And we treated it as a project that we wanted to make people think. We wanted the audience to go home and have a conversation with themselves, both a local audience and all over the world, because it does deal with something that is recognized all over those kind of systems and that kind of environment all over the world. And I mean, otherwise it was a pleasure working with Steve Coogan and Andrea Riseborough. They were probably the best two international actors we could have had on set. They were
brilliant.
So much respect, so much even ground, getting behind the camera for me so that I could get a performance, even though they weren't on. And I mean, you'll get people, local people, who won't do that because they're too good, you know.
And just an
all-round team effort. And up until the last point, I think it was just passion. And hopefully that shows through and it's accepted the right way and viewed the right way.
So as an actor, I mean, you never know where your role is coming from, your next role or your first role or whatever. And I think you also carry goals. Like, you're like, okay, I want to be an action star. I really would kill to get a lot of action movies.
Yeah, that's actually where I was also going to go.
Snap, girl. So, did this take you by surprise that you actually were picked up in this kind of role? And what are your actor aspirations and future sort of targets for reach?
It kind of came out of nowhere. I was auditioning for another film the same day called The Game Changers, and that was with Daniel Radcliffe in Cape Town.
Child.
So cool.
Ooh, child.
You know, just auditioning.
Just put it out there.
Just the little old actor you may know as Harry Potter.
And that was filming in Cape Town, and I was doing Generations at the same time, flying back and forth. And then this script had come the same time I auditioned for that, and then it was a long process and there was a lot of callbacks, and I know they had quite a long list and they wanted to be very careful, but luckily Oliver would we'd be on Skype during the audition process, and he really liked me and we worked together. I did a lot of preparation, went and met some warders, and kind of really got into the experience. And I think that's when it hit me, when I met some of the men that had gone through this. And then I realized how important it is for these kind of people to, you know,
be heard.
Their stories to be told.
But tell me something. Surely playing a character like this takes an emotional toll on you as Garion. So how did you deal with that? Like, while you were filming, how did you manage to just decompress and detach from this character?
I think that goes back to what I was saying before. It helped a lot that me as Garion, I'm so far away from Leon, that when I was on set and I was in that space, it didn't feel like anything familiar at all. And I think I'm one of those type of people, luckily, that can switch it on and off. So
that's a great trait to have.
Between takes, I'd be, you know, playing the clown, trying to keep the energy up. And, because it was taking a toll on everyone, up until the people, the stuntmen who had to do the hangings. And they were being hung, and they came up to me halfway through shooting. We had like a 2-week shoot in all those prison scenes. It was the last stretch. And they said, how are you dealing with this? We've all, all these grown men have been having nightmares the whole week.
Yes.
Wow.
And me and Dion had a chat. He plays the warrant officer, and it just speaks so much on how those lines get blurred the more you get used to these kind of things.
Yes.
And how these young men, without any kind of preparation or way of dealing with it or anyone to see, would have had those lines blurred between what's right and wrong, and just getting so numb to death.
Yes.
I think it happened to me within 3 months of shooting. I think
because you have to, right? To survive.
Yeah.
It's not this evil thing. You just have to do certain things in order for you to be able to cope in your everyday life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but you acted with quite a cast. Like, I mean, this cast had Steve Coogan, who was brilliant as well. I mean, you know what I loved about Steve? He was telling such an intense story, but there were moments where he could just make you laugh.
Yeah, you know, and it's so subtle. I think he's very human.
He's such a brilliant comedian. Mm. He really is. But he managed to have such a fine line between where he said really comedic lines and how he delivered that. And then he was very serious in certain aspects where he was really so adamant on getting you off for this, you know, particular crime. Yeah. But, I mean, how do you feel as an actor when you get to act with such incredible talent? Like,
it was a bit surreal, I guess. It was straight out of school, and then Bill Paxton, Daniel Radcliffe, Steve Coogan, Andrew Riseborough. It was like a dream.
Wow.
But I think...
Don't even forget him.
I know. It was such a right timing, right place. And I think I just had to treat it the same way I could have anyone. I think they really enjoyed the fact that I did that. And I think I hadn't... I'd had a long break from acting between the ages of 13 and then 18.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was still quite new to me, and I just treated it as if, you know, it would have been anyone. I think that really helped a lot.
Yes. That you weren't fanning out every scene. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
You weren't fanboying, you know? Yeah. I want to know, with being an actor, being in the industry, I think sometimes naturally you develop a very creative eye for... behind the scenes and actually producing your own stuff. And because we've got what we have at our disposal, social media, we can produce easier these days. Is that something that you want to go into? Do you want to start producing your own series, movies?
I'm glad you asked. Definitely. I think it was a big decision between studying and going straight into the industry. And I thought the only way I could do both as much as I wanted to would be to go into the industry and learn while on set and get some hands-on experience. There are different departments that I'm very interested in, from art to cinematography to writing. And I've got a brother who's also in the industry. And, of course, my dad is also in the industry.
Yes, I wanted to say, you come from a family that's in the industry. So it wasn't as hard for you to break the news to your parents that I'm going to go into the art, right?
Actually, a little bit harder. Because, I mean... we need an accountant or a lawyer. We've got a family.
Save the family.
Like, actors and a mom as a drama teacher. It's a bit tricky.
Oh my gosh. Everyone was sitting when you called that family meeting. They were like, God, please let him be the accountant. Yeah. Just one.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm going into theater. They were like, shit.
Yeah, I know. Oh God, no.
But another one.
Thank God I did. I took the chance. It was a big,
How does your family feel about this? I mean, they must be incredibly proud.
A bit in between. I mean, obviously, me and my brother are 3 years apart. We look very similar. So we heated competition, but still lots of love. and I think the best thing we can do is just inspire each other. And, you know, we're trying to work together as a team as much as we can. And just, you know, support each other up until a point and then know where the balance lies in terms of, you know, trying to be stable. We can't have a, you can't have a house full of everyone who wants to sing and dance.
Exactly.
Know?
But do you, is there like a certain genre you're more drawn to? So are you more drawn to drama, comedy? You know, what would you like to do more of? Rom-coms?
I must say, especially around here in this industry in South Africa, you got to take what you get. You know, there's a bit of, like, it's a bit of a gamble, but at the same time, I enjoy that. In that, it's very little chance that you'll get the same thing
consistently.
I seem to be more attracted to drama. It's a lot easier to have a character with many layers, despite what it looks like from a viewer's perspective. Having all those layers makes the decisions you make or anything you want to do on camera so much easier. And I think, obviously, I'd definitely, after this film, be down for a comedy set somewhere tropical.
Yeah.
Ooh, and, la.
You're like, take me away.
Exactly.
Oh, but actually, you could put, now that you say that, because off Mike, we were joking around at the Leo DiCaprio thing.
Yes.
Now you say that, maybe you could do like a remake of The Beach.
The Beach. Oh, I love that movie.
I think you'd be perfect for that. What you say? And then if you obviously need us, I mean,
I'm just saying, I don't know if I can act. I've been told I'm very dramatic.
Girl, you can do it all.
I'll just be the chick that just keeps walking behind the scene. You don't know what her purpose is, but she's always...
she's just there. She lives there.
She's just lingering.
She'll be the scene bomber.
Yes.
Scene bomber.
Like when you're shooting a beach scene, I'm just in the water, like, just like, Hey.
Actually, on that note, like, who are some of your acting heroes? Who are the guys that you really
aspire to?
Leonardo DiCaprio would definitely be one.
Hello, duh.
It's so weird because you watch interviews with him and he grew up watching all these old films and that's what inspired him to be an actor. And then I've grown up watching all his films and that's what inspired me.
Which makes him feel incredibly old.
Well, yeah, let's never, yeah, hopefully not.
He's like, I'm the vintage actor people used to watch.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, Robert De Niro as well, Johnny Depp, Dustin Hoffman, and then some of the classics, Michael Caine.
I love Michael Caine.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of those acting workshops, and I think that's where I get a lot of
amazing.
My studying.
Yes.
I did the thing, what are these called?
Air quotes.
The air quotes, just in case anyone did. Yeah.
In studio, we're having a lot of flair. You guys are missing out.
So definitely Wi-Fi over cable then.
Would you do a reality show? Because we all know that is just scripted.
A reality show, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
follow the life of Gary and Drought.
I mean, up until the point where it's still tasteful, you know, it can always go
okay,
over
can you really get tasteful? Because I feel I'd be tasteful for the first week. Mm. And then I'd just forget.
Yeah.
then the true self.
Because they rely on that kind of footage where you just like, where you start losing your damn mind.
Yeah. No, I think I'd like to keep, you know, Gary in a mystery. If I'm fortunate enough to get a lot of roles, keep those what people see.
But, you know, that's what I actually loved about you, because I really thought, like, when I got home, because I contacted you on Facebook or Instagram. No, I'm creepy like that, y'all. I went to Instagram.
Instagram comments.
I commented on one of these photos. Like, hey, great photo, by the way. But would you like to be on my show? But you are
stalker alert.
Yeah, I'm a complete stalker. Like, if people listen to the show, they know how crazy I am. So, but I mean, you're very private on your Instagram and your Facebook. And I thought, you know what I thought? I mean, you start in a movie with Anand Singh, for goodness sake, you know, Steve Coogan. Like, you've been in such, I thought you'd have like a big head. Like, you know, you'd have all these followers that are like, oh my gosh, Gary, like, I love y'all. You are so chilled. So chilled. Like, is that, did you do that intentionally?
I think, I had a page a while back and I had my little moment when I was around 13. Ooh, I'm the guy on TV.
You were 13.
All the compliments. And then I kind of grew up and I think I am, as you said earlier, a lot more interested in the craft. I mean, I don't mind the attention and, you know, it means people like my work and I don't get any negative attention, which is great and appreciate it a lot. I used to have a page, took it down, unfortunately, just before all this.
Wow.
But, you know, I think if I ever had that kind of thing, it would be to spread my name, get viewers, hopefully people that are interested in my craft and my work to follow. I'm not really interested in filling up my personal life with more work, you know. I like to delve into a project and be wholeheartedly into that. And there are a lot of people who, you know, find the time and enjoy posting where they are and what they're doing and getting that following. I think that keeps a lot of people energized and alive and going.
But I think
I wanted this for so long.
Yes.
My brother was on sets when I was about 6 years old.
Yes.
And, you know, when I'm there, that's what gets me going. And
But that's what I love about you, the sense of mystery. Because we live in a society where literally you can Google anyone and you can find anything you really want on that person. I mean, from the type of underwear they like to, you know, people are so open about their lives these days. So I think that's actually what's going to keep people curious. The fact that they don't know. Mm. Like, I mean, I tried to stalk you, like I did. And I was just like, what the hell?
Like a post every 6 months, maybe. Yes.
And a thanks here and there.
You
know what I'm saying? So, Mr. Dowds, what do you do
for fun?
I'm quite I try to keep it very mellow. People call me, like, I'm quite a Durbanite, despite I was born in Manzintoti and then I moved on to Durban.
Okay.
But I'm like longboarding. I'm flashing
a
big scar
on his elbow.
And skateboarding. I've got quite a close knit group of friends who've stuck together since school and they're also very mellow. We just kind of hang out. And then I'm always with my girlfriend. She lives down the road.
Aww.
That's how we met.
Oh, but your girlfriend is so. She's a knockout. But she handles it so well, because I mean, at the premiere, obviously everyone was like, I want a picture with Gary. And she handles it so well.
She's taking the pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, let me take a picture. I'm like, girl, be in the picture. Stop this. Like, I mean, that's a great thing.
She's very sweet.
You met
her
before
humble.
All of this, right?
Yeah. Just before the release, she had no idea. Thankfully. Yeah. There's no question.
It wasn't like an undercover stalker.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to implant myself in his life.
It would be very scary. Yeah. No, I think from the beginning, she wants to be a doctor. So I was yeah. Okay, there we go.
You know what? Someone with balance. Yeah.
The family must love her.
Yeah, I'm gonna have the soccer mom van and stay at home dad, look after the garden. She can go get that paycheck, work hard. I'll pick up the kids. It'll be cool.
You know, do an acting role here and there.
It feels a lot like a little bit of a Freddie Prinze vibe. Remember, Freddie Prinze retreated to being like the soccer dad and doing all those things. So you'll strike a balance.
He'll be a more talented. He'll be a more talented Freddie
Ooh,
Prinze.
She's throwing shade here.
It's not
she's
shade.
She's saying Freddie Prinze is not talented.
I'm saying he's talented enough. Just not Gary untalented. You know, it's going to start becoming a verb, guys. People are going to be like,
be hashtag,
you know, you're good, but you're not Gary untalented.
Are you Gary untalented?
That's what I'm saying. But like, so how do your friends, okay, obviously you chose your friends very well, that they're not intimidated by all of this.
It's very weird because they, it's never, I mean, they'll see the poster and everything and they're like, wow, that's cool. Like, they'd never expect that from me as a person.
Because you're very chilled. You're so chilled. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, if I had your talent, child, the world would know. I'd be like biting a sandwich and being like, I am Candace Mama.
But to be honest, I mean, I really think that, you know, everybody carries such a different energy. Mm. And I think that, I mean, you in yourself, Candace, you're humble. Fundamentally, you are a chill chick. You're humble about it. I mean, we celebrate who we are in very different ways. But I really think that there is something so great in just never losing the human side of whatever it is that we're doing, your authenticity, and there's really longevity in that, you know, because these things are so fleeting. Mm. Our industries change. One day you're hot, the next you're not. And so I think it's important. It's become all the more important. The way, you know, our frequencies are challenged these days. Just like human versus having a phone, having WhatsApp to answer to. You're just always
we're more
to be
connected.
Switched
on. We're on.
Mm. Yeah, and that's why I don't know if you've heard about this lady, but Marina Abramovich.
No,
I love her. You can actually see her in Jay-Z's music video for Picasso Baby.
Oh, I know her. I love her. She's gorgeous.
Yes.
She's just got such an air of just grace and just poise. I love her.
Yeah, so she's a performance artist, and actually the last documentary, you might enjoy this. Maybe it's something for you to do when you've got your downtime with the girl. It's called Space in Between. And she sets off into Brazil to put herself through all these different healing methods. She couldn't quite deal with the fact that her husband had cheated on her. They got divorced, etc. She just couldn't find a way to process it. And so she sets off. And it's just incredible and very inspiring how, you know, a lot of the people that she encounters along the way, when she asks them why they are at that particular junction or whatever, they're just like, the frequency of the world is so much, so we've actually got to make a very conscious effort to decode. And it's just amazing. She's got an institute in the States as well, where it's like crystal healing therapy and all kinds of cool things. So check
out. Do you
out.
Believe in that stuff, Garen?
I'm
like energy healing,
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
I'm very open to it. I think I'm finding my own journey along and finding my own way of seeing spirituality and higher power. And but yeah, I'm very open to that kind of thing, and I do believe in it. I think it's quite evident if you start to look at life with that perspective and you start to recognize those sorts of things. And I think, yeah, just what you were saying, different people and frequencies and...
But you know what, Dee? I actually just thought of something. You and Gary are very different, you know, because you've been in the public eye for so long and you carry it so well.
Thank you.
But your life is, you know, on Instagram, what I love. And, you know, guys, I'm the queen of unfollowing. Like, I can't deal with selfies. I can't deal with like 3 times a day post. Like, I just don't deal with that well.
Yeah.
But with you, not just because you're my friend, but you post in a very, you almost posting so that your fan base can get a sense of your life, you know, and be incorporated into your life. So was that a conscious decision that you made?
You're so on the money with that. And also, mind you, I've had people tell me that they've unfollowed me because they just feel like, whatever. And the truth is, I don't mind that. It's totally okay because at the end of the day, you open up your Instagram and you know what it is you want to see. If you don't want to see me, like, wherever I am, hell, I don't mind. It doesn't mean that you love me any less. Like, you know, I'm going to put him under the bus here, but Koja Bafo did that to me the other day. He was like, listen, I've unfollowed you, just by the way, because, you know, if 50% of your stuff is just you, then unfollow. And he's like, you're sitting here now with me. You're a cool chick. You know, when I see you, I see you. It's dope. I know you well. And I'm like, that's great, you know?
I love that you carry it so well because it's not who you are in terms of. When I say it's not who you are, I mean in terms of the fact that there are a lot of people out there who post in order to get likes. And it becomes Instagram and Facebook becomes who they are as a person. Yeah. Yes. So they live their lives to get 100 likes, whatever.
Yeah.
But that's not why you post.
No.
You know, you don't post for the million likes.
No, no. And I always laugh because I think, you know, if people look at my followers, and I mean, I haven't got a lot of followers, you know, compared to
a lot of followers.
I mean, they're substantial and they're beautiful and I love every single person that follows me for whatever reason they follow me. But
you've got quite a
followers
few.
Followers versus...
I'm just saying, you're putting the rest of us under pressure. I mean,
followers versus likes is nowhere
correlation
near where
wise.
I think it would be because it is a working Instagram to me. It is very diverse. It's I do get it's become a job as well in some cases that I have to, you know, I'm
people make money off Instagram.
Yeah.
Garion should acting and, just, you know, go a little soft.
You know, you can post for money.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, you should do that.
There you go. Like, boom, boom, boom.
Right.
So thank you. I appreciate that. And actually, you know, that's so accurate about my Instagram. It is about putting people in my world and letting them see
but
what
it's got
happens,
purpose.
The good and the bad times. And
that's
exactly.
the thing. I feel like it's got a purpose to it.
Thank
and
you.
I like following people who've got a message to their Instagram feed, you know? And your message cannot be, I love myself so much. Yeah. I need to post
Leonardo
10 pictures
DiCaprio
of me.
Leonardo DiCaprio is a prime example. I mean, every single post is about
the world.
The world, the environment.
It has a message, right? And Hailey Berry, actually, I was very surprised. She's only got about 800 and something thousand followers. And like, it's just a beautiful page to look at.
Yeah.
I didn't know she had that artistic eye, but everything is just so beautiful. You know, she takes the time to filter it right. And gosh, do I envy those people. Because I try. Like, you know, you'll look at my Instagram and the first three rows will be like, they'll have a theme. It's like, life is good. And then all of a sudden I meet someone really cool that I have to post. And I'm like,
exactly.
You know what? I don't have 3 pictures of this person. Sorry.
just don't have to be the wild card.
All right. And I really envy those people who can actually sit there, filter it correctly, crop it to the right. You know, I'm just like, I look at their page, I'm like, wow. And then I go post my sandwich that looks like ass, but it tasted good.
And that is what is so beautiful about something like Instagram, is that people interpret their space and their pages in the way they want to. It's not necessarily me and my style to have everything beautiful all the time, because it's, you know, when it's authentic
crazy.
To you, it's beautiful.
Vibrant. It's,
so like Halle Berry, like Leonardo DiCaprio, he's using who he is as Leo to amplify his biggest interest. And I think that's so dope.
I love that. But that being said, do you guys think we're overexposed? Like, just as everyday citizens? I mean, back in the day, you know, our celebrities or our, just our normal citizens, we had privacy. Yeah. You know, you actually, if you wanted to stalk someone, you had to get in a damn bus or a car and go do the legwork. Like,
meet
now,
them at a tree.
Girl, the way I'm so glad I wasn't born in that time, because the bruises I would have from stalking people. But, you know, now we're in a time where literally it's become so normal to stalk someone. You know, you meet someone for the first time, you put their name in Google. You put their name in Facebook, Instagram, whatever. And it's like literally your days will go by and you're just flicking through this person and you're just like, don't double tap, don't double tap, don't double tap.
Especially late at night when you can't sleep.
Girl, no.
Then they'll wake up to double taps. And
my phone malfunctions sometimes. So I need to be very careful about my stalking habits.
Is that what they call it now? Malfunctioning.
Malfunctioning. Okay. Because I realized breaking a phone.
Or malfunctioning.
Malfunctioning, you know, same difference. But back to my question, do you guys think we're too overexposed?
You go first, dude.
Yeah, totally. I I envy the rock stars of the 70s and the 80s right. who had, you know, that was, you'd see them live and they had a kind of persona they could put on and that's what they had.
Mm. And they had a private life.
Yeah. Mm. And I mean, then they had diehard fans who would follow them and want to see them and chat to them and talk to them, interact with them, not stalk them, know everything, yes. and then hold different things, have a platform where they can talk about them and whether they like them or not. And
I like that, but can I ask you something based on what you just said? Do you think that because we're so overexposed, everyone thinks they've got the right to have an opinion on how you live your life?
I think what you put on social media, as much as it is a lot about us, it's like 1/10 of who you are as a human being. And if you had to have a conversation with a lot of people that you hate on social media, you probably wouldn't hate them anymore.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. You know what I don't get though? D, I'll let you answer in a second.
No,
what I don't get is the people that take their time to hate you. Like, I'm like, why didn't you just unfollow me? You don't have to come all the way to my page, comment on picture that I posted 100 weeks ago and say, I hate you. Yeah. Like, thanks, girl. Yeah. Thank you for taking the time to scroll all the way to the last picture of my Instagram to tell me how much you hate me. Do you get a lot of hate mail, D? I mean, but you're so vibrant.
Say,
you can't.
I really can count the amount of times I can't even remember, to be honest. People are really
nice,
mostly kind, and take the time to just say the most incredible things to me. And you know,
thank
goodness. At a time where I had even, I'd left Espresso, and I was kind of like in between, like, what do I do? You know, like, where do I want to go? And just trying to figure it out. I mean, social media had a very big role to play in keeping me motivated and keeping me encouraged about still pursuing TV and entertainment and knowing that there was still something in it for me. You know, people say, like, we stopped watching Hectic Nana when you left. We miss you on TV. So
that's
definitely
so beautiful.
A complex and beautiful world that we live in with social media, I think.
And you know what? I think we do have to, we have to acknowledge that it is another world, because a lot of the time, this is what I always tell people, and I'm guilty of it as well. You know, I've seen some girls, you know, I speak at a lot of universities and stuff, and they'll come up to me and they said, when we found out you were speaking, we, you know, followed you on this and that and whatever, and they're like, I want your life. And I'm like, girl, you do not want this craziness
you
in
know,
your life.
Like, because you cannot judge a person's holistic life just by what you see on Instagram.
You don't always post the crazy, right? Like, if I have the flu and I just showered and I didn't want to put on makeup because I just look like ass anyway and my makeup is expensive and I just don't feel like wasting it, I'm not going to like Instagram that and be like, feeling like ass. You know what I'm saying?
You know, you could always Instagram story it though. Now.
No, I could Snapchat it. Use a really
so
great filter.
We've defined where we like to snap.
No, just use a really great filter with the flowers around my head and be like, not feeling myself.
You know?
while I've got a full face of makeup.
I think at the end of the day, we also still have control. Mm. As much as we say we don't have control, yes, in certain elements we don't, but you still always have control. With if you're going to put 100%. Something out there and you're not going to get the reaction that you always like, tough.
I want to say, if you put it out there, be ready for it to be judged.
Exactly.
Because I think for me, the biggest thing, I treasure my relationships with people. And like, I'll never post, if I'm seeing someone, I'll never post them on my social media. Like, y'all will see it when I get married. Yeah. You'll just see a ring and me and like a baby. And you'll be like, I didn't even know she was in a relationship.
Is this immaculate conception?
Like, you won't even know I was in a relationship. You'll just be like, she's starting to look bloated in all her pictures. Like, why? You know? And then I'll be like, I just welcomed a new baby boy. You know what I'm saying? Because I just feel we value so little in today's society.
Yeah.
You know, we're so used to relationships can come and go. You know?
People have become extremely disposable to one another. In
you know how many
well.
People I've seen have like 5 soulmates in the space of a year on my timeline? Like, I think he's the one. I'm like, girl, stop thinking. Like, thinking is what got you into this mess. Stop it. Like, give him some time. You know,
it is that sort of instant gratification. You know, people can't lie to themselves sometimes when they, you know, why are you doing it? And I think sometimes it's about, I still don't think I know it all with my social media. I'm still learning.
Yeah.
It's interesting for me when people tell me why they unfollowed me. Why am I going to hate on you when you tell me that? Because I'm learning by it, you know.
But you're confident in yourself.
Because
I know someone I unfollowed who doesn't know I unfollowed them yet. And if I had to tell them, they would like lose their ish. You know what I'm saying? Because I just couldn't stand the fact that I know your authentic self.
Right.
And the person you're portraying is such a lie from who you are as a person.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it just, for me, I don't mind. Do good for the world. Like, yeah. you know, flipping hell. If you want to feed 1,000 children and you want to post it on Instagram, do it. Mm. You know, I'm all for that. But don't lie to people about yeah. why you are doing it. You know what I'm saying? Right. So for me, it's created a lot of like fake people. Mm. Like all of us want to, like, you know, it's so funny to me. When people are like, take a selfie of like a homeless person as they're giving them a bag of
yeah.
food. And then they're like, you know what? In this world, it's not about what you do for others. I don't do it so that people can see me. Girl, please.
Then girl, you should not have posted the damn picture. End of story. Full stop. Be gone. Bye bye.
Before we go, oh my gosh, that flew so quickly. Darian, when's the movie coming out?
It comes out on the 28th of October.
Oh my God. Everyone. Everyone must go see this movie. Do you know where it's coming out? Is it coming out in all cinemas?
I know for sure Sturkinikor, all Sturkinikor. And from the 28th, be prepared. I can't say enjoy the movie, but be open and experience it on your own.
Awesome. Beautiful. And Darian, if people do want to find out as little information about you as possible, where can they find you?
I'm on all of the social media. I've got my Twitter handle's just at Garian Dowds, and my Instagram's at Gaz Dowds. Facebook, I try to keep as private as I can. But
yeah, it is Garian Dowds. Garian is a very unique name. It's G-A-R-I-O-N. Did I get it right?
Yeah.
And surname Dowds, D-O-W-D-S. Yes, I got it right.
Woohoo! Spelling bee winner. Yeah.
Thank you, girl. You know the sweat that was coming down my neck. And D, tell us any last words for you.
Yeah, thank you for having me first and foremost. It's
of
always
course,
just so much fun.
You've got the best
fun.
Energy.
Oh, thanks. Aww. Energy on all levels was amazing.
I love this show.
So thank you. And just go out, be great. Try and be the best version of yourself that you can be and keep it authentic, yo.
Awesome. And where can people find you, Dee?
You can find me on the grams. It's just Deneen Naidu and you'll find me. On Twitter is the only place where I give you homework because I've got an underscore. But otherwise, I'm very easy. And it is Naidu, D-double-O, not you at the end, if you need
that. There is a Naidu like that. Okay. Thank you so much for listening to the Weekly Mashup. I will catch you again next week and T will be back in studio with me. I love you guys for listening. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.